my next note says, die of infection already. Because he's been in there for like, he's had his leg chopped off since day one. He's been there for probably at least a week. I mean, his, mm-hmm. his, oh God, I was just like, die of infection. Unless we're missing the scene where he gets antibiotics. And
well, that's not nearly as important as Johnny Depp pressing down a slider and then eating it and putting alcohol into his shake.
Yeah. Very good. I like that. It looked like a good lunch, you know, until the end scene.
There is a lot of backstory in this movie. Like a lot of, and not just blacks talking about it, but like flashbacks to it. Mm-hmm. And we get a couple of scenes where there are flashbacks to scenes that were already in the movie.
Yes, but those flashbacks add details, which is mm-hmm. nice, because if it was just another scene if it was just the same scene from another perspective, it would be like, oh, come on, man. But yeah. But it's actually pivotal towards the actual conclusion of the film. And I gotta give kudos to that, because mm-hmm. like to make multiple self-referential cutback scenes that don't make me want to hit my head on the wall.
Yeah.
Okay, dive infection. Okay, so then I think we go to the scene where they get in the rental car, and this is where they meet up with the posers again at the Quickie Mart. And my note is, the rental car would have GPS. They could have just found him days ago.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they probably would have found him when they didn't turn in the rental car again.
Yeah. They would have gone searching for that. Anybody who works for a rental car company, if you want to tell us the exact procedure.
We will not be Googling it ourselves. But if you have an idea, let us know.
Right.
And this is where I wrote back, the cutscenes are really awesome. Okay, so then we go to the swimming scene, mm-hmm. where, as opposed to the previous swimming scene where Howard just takes away the platform that Wallace is on, or Mr. Tusky's on, yeah. and just throws him into the water and he sees the corpse. Now we see Howard and Mr. Tusk in the water together, and they're walking around, and my note is, they're walking on corpses.
Well, it seemed like it was deep enough that the corpses would sink all the way down to the bottom and he would be more swimming. And it reminded me of like when you're teaching someone to swim. It's one of those scenes where in the previous scene where he does give Mr. Tusk the fish, Howard is very gentle. Mm-hmm. He's very kind. He's not, I mean, at the very end of the scene, he does like push his head underneath
during
the water.
The first swimming scene, yeah.
Right. No, it wasn't in the first one, because the first one he just got, it was just.
The platform got taken out. And so the second swimming scene,
right,
when he's in the water with him.
Right, is when he pushes him down. But there's this moment of the first swimming scene that he was, Howard was acting very gentle. There was like a scene where
he's like, swim!
Yeah.
Swim!
Yeah, but then the scene with Wallace, Mr. Tusk, and Howard after that, that's the one where he feeds him the mackerel, and that's the one where he's like talking about some of the different things that he had. It was there was this level of gentleness.
Yeah, this is what, so visually he's got Wallace by the elbows of his flippers, mm-hmm. and he's walking him around the pool in a very therapeutic manner. I've mm-hmm. worked with kids like that. And then this is where I wrote, dude ate Mr. Tusk.
Yeah.
So let's go back. We had this beautiful scene where in the beginning where they described how this the original Mr. Tusk had kept him sheltered for, and I will throw back to myself now, 6 months. He had cared for this dude on, he had cared for Howard on this island. And then 6 months to the day, I suppose, Howard just straight up eats him. Howard eats Mr. Tusk. And then within the hour, help shows up. Here's my contention with this. What the f*** were they doing for 6 months that on the last day he was like, I'm going to eat you.
Right.
Tell me. Any megafauna experts in the audience, please feel the...
Sorry. No, but this kind of goes back to the time frame thing. I mean, there's a lot of moments where it's just like, and what happened? Like when Wallace at the very beginning, he goes to the funeral for the kid who got his leg cut off, and then like it, and that's in the middle of the day, and then it's like what, night at a bar?
Yep, cut two all through this movie.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So, I mean, there's definitely showing a passage of time, but yeah. the thing that makes Howard crazy is he had to eat his friend. I put down, moral of the story, don't eat your friends. I mean, unless they want to.
I mean, if you're into it, it worked out for a German guy once.
Yeah. But it seems like, you know, he just kind of got pushed over the edge because of the fact that he had to eat not only his friend, but something beautiful. And it was kind of, I wrote, it kind of humanized him for me. This was before the rewatch. I don't think that now. It didn't necessarily humanize it. Cause I mean, when we find out that he ate his Waller's friend, that was the second swimming scene.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The scene is very gentle.
Until he pushes his head in the water.
But up until that point, it's kind of humanizing.
Oh yeah, he's very much performing an intimate act, and you get this feeling because over the past few scenes, that's what he's been doing. He's just been feeding to him and talking to him gently, and we're kind of, because of all this Depp Quebec and this back and forth, we have forgotten the freaking dinner scene.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a great director puts space between those things, especially when you're trying to establish the level of crazy that Howard Howell has.
Mm-hmm. And then they kind of, I mean, looking at distance, they're kind of brought in this scene very close together.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of shows that humanity has gone away. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it does lend itself to the fact that Howard's like, most noble creature, love him so much, I want my best friend to be a walrus, and I will be the carpenter, and we will dance and sing and eat clams or whatever. But then he's just like, but newsflash, I ate the
Yeah.
And then he shoves it in the water, and then we go immediately from this place where we've been lulled into this safe place to we're like, oh shit, right? He's in a meat suit. We're all in danger.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and help isn't that freaking close.
Right, right. And it's like, you know, again, 6 months before he ate his walrus buddy. And was his walrus buddy just giving him a fish every day?
Could you eat some seaweed or something?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So,
tries it out on the rocks and eats it like it's a cracker.
Yeah. Make you some sashimi. Mm-hmm. Get you some. You could eat almost anything from the ocean. But okay. So we go from Duday, Mr. Tusk to walrus fight scene.
Oh, I know. And it's intercut with, Teddy and Allie just running through the house. A few points. This is where I bring up Quentin Tarantino, because there's moments in this scene which you hear Tusk by Fleetwood Mac.
I can't really impersonate it. I looked it up on SoundHound.
But there's a lot of like moments where you get some of these camera effects that Quentin Tarantino uses.
Yes.
So it's interesting that you say that, you know, Quentin Tarantino was going for the part of Howard.
I mean, Quentin Tarantino is the equally righteous king of non sequitur storytelling, where you have all of these very, and it's very popular in media now to take elements that don't look connected, and then to like, so you have all these things that look like they don't belong together, and then have them all immediately connect towards the very end. So we've got, you know, girlfriend and best friend fighting for the life of this essentially jerk who could just go and F off if we really wanted him to.
Yeah.
And then can I just say that I super appreciate the nuance of the walrus fight scene? Because, okay, so he's just like, Mr. Tusk never had a chance to, I'm not actually quoting the movie right now, although my voice work is on point.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, Mr. Tusk never had a chance when I just took his life and ate him, but now I'm giving you a chance. And he like shows up in his own walrus suit.
Here's the thing. He can get in and out of that suit.
His beard sticking out of that suit. The first time I was like, did he have to stuff it to like make sure it poofed out all right? And then I was like, oh no, that's his beard. That's his creepy old man beard. Oh, man. But yes, he's climbed himself in this thing. He obviously can't sew himself. And he's not looking to be an equal, but he's looking to be on an equal playing field.
Right.
And that I think, is communicated pretty clear. So he's just like, I'm giving you the chance. Mr. Tusk never had, Mr. Tusk.
I'm just like, I mean, I just wrote down hypocrite. A guy makes a walrus suit for himself that he can climb in and out of. Doesn't do it for this guy.
Well, okay, so this is when the Fleetwood Mac comes on. Mm-hmm. So just imagine, like going all in the background. And then, this fight ensues while the rescuers enter the house. Johnny Depp is lagged behind for some reason. And then you can hear the shouting from other sides of the house. And like, they're running hither and thither like a friggin' Scooby-Doo cartoon. And then they're like nudging at each other. Like, why they're fighting on land? I guess that's how walruses do it. But, Wallace is getting some good licks in.
Mm-hmm.
And
Howard comes out of the walrus suit.
He goes, I've gone, I'm gonna mess this, it's not an actual quote.
Yeah.
He's like, I've awakened in you the primeval instinct. You've gone, and I cannot stand this phrase anymore, but you've gone full walrus. And, I've awakened the animal instinct in you, but so have I.
Yeah.
And he stands up shredding this. Why his suit had to be made out of human flesh too, I don't know.
He just had extra.
He had it laying around.
He doesn't like waste not wanna.
Okay, so he stands up, and his opponent is lower than his center of gravity, which I think is never a great place to put yourself into. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, he's got this walrus hat on with like the tusks sticking out. Roll credits on that one.
Walrus
and like,
hat.
It's what's left of the head of his walrus suit. And you're like, you want, I mean, like, you describe it, but like, really, there was this blood smeared super convincingly crazy old man standing over this relatively convincing walrus creature. And he's just like, I'm going to fight you. And he raises, and I don't know if you caught this, but he raises the phallus from earlier in the film. Mm-hmm. Which, where did he have that? Did he keep it in his suit? So then Wallace, so he stabs his tusk, which must have hurt because, like, he's only had it, like, 3 days, mm-hmm. maybe 2 days. Right. He stabs it into dude's foot. Dude falls backwards immediately. Like, I don't know if that's what I would do as a biped, but whatever. He's just gone back from equal walrus to walrus fight. He's standing up over Wallace, mm-hmm. who, at this point, we should just call him Mr. Tusk, mm-hmm. Because he ain't ever going to be Wallace again. So Mr. Tusk, Mach 2, has just rammed his freshly tusked face into Howard's foot.
A tusk that he's had on his face probably for like 2 to 3 days is what we figured.
And, you know, I don't know a lot about dentature. Nope.
Dentistry?
Well, yeah. Or, you know, just the orthodontic field. And I'm sure you're shocked to learn that. But I don't think that's set, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I've had a tooth replaced. And that business is sensitive for quite some time. He takes the dude down like a sack of potatoes. He's just done. Like, he hits the ground. And then it looks like he's like a stereotypical starfish position. He just, at this point... The rest of what you see of Howard is him just on his back,
mm-hmm.
just making pained expressions as he is being.
But there's a little bit of relief because this is something he's wanted. He pretty much got himself into this position, traumatizing someone so that way he could, you know, die. I mean, I see that as like there's a level of like he wants this to happen.
This level of suicide is unreal, though. I mean, like you become a mass serial killer. You got a pool full of walrus men and enough leftover skin to make an extra soup for yourself. And then like just when he gives it up to like hit him with the dong. And then immediately rolls over. He doesn't roll over. He falls on his back. But like, it doesn't make sense to me incredibly much, but it really does want to die.
Mm-hmm.
But then he doesn't want to die, but then he does want to die.
Well, it's like what you said earlier, you know, equal playing field, I guess, is, you know, he didn't want to die quickly. He wanted to die in a fight where he felt like Mr. Tusk 2.0 had an opportunity, the reincarnation of Mr. Tusk.
Mm-hmm.
Comes up and has a reason to go ahead, and he wants Mr. Tusk to be given a chance to actually fight. Maybe, and this is something we're not shown in the flashback, but maybe he snuck up on Mr. Tusk and maybe he like killed him violently, or maybe he just felt like if Mr. Tusk knew who he really was, he would have been more eager to fight. You know, like Mr. Tusk was his friend and he trusted him and he had no reason to fear for his life.
Yeah, he basically domesticated Mr. Tusk.
Yeah.
But in the first telling of his story before he recants and admits his murdery ways, it was more like he was domesticated by a walrus.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a difficult switch. So we're left with this, the rage and the Fleetwood Mac, and then we've got these other characters running around the house. They finally make it. And the climax matches up, I mean, pretty hardcore with his girlfriend and his friend Teddy walking in to the, or running into the enclosure, I guess you would call it.
The pool.
Yeah. No. And then Depp raises his gun. Like, he comes in after them. So girlfriend sees him. Teddy, I don't know why I call her just girlfriend. What's her name?
Allie, I think.
Allie. I don't know. I just mm-hmm. not a very, like, I don't know. I just not my favorite character. So, like,
yeah.
Anyways, so they come in, see the horror, and then Depp, who hasn't been running through the house, somehow magically, when he gets there, he goes straight to the room. He's just like, oh, I see, with his bad Quebec accent. He's like, oh, I see that this is the natural house plan to go to the killing room.
Yeah, he knows exactly how this house is laid out.
Yeah.
He's probably been in a similar house. Yeah. He knows exactly where the walrus pool room is.
Yeah, these guys have been doing, like, the Scooby-Doo 5K, and he's just like, I know right where to go.
Yeah. To be fair, they do go upstairs, and they wouldn't know that he's in a pool, So, yeah.
Oh, no, they would. Well, ostensibly, if I'm using that word right, they do know that the guy's like, he's trying to turn me into a walrus. Like,
yeah, but, oh, yeah, he did leave that, but they never acknowledged it. They never, like, that would, like, if someone left me a distressing voicemail, and I would be listening over to that in so many different ways. Like, I would know that they were, I mean, it kind of just glazes over that one fact. And it seems like, I don't know, maybe that's just me.
I'm just, who has a pool upstairs?
Yeah.
And if you're with a murder guy, mm-hmm. I mean, I think logic follows that you would go to the basement.
Right. That seems like, even if you're like, if you're going to hide people, why would you hide them upstairs?
Yeah.
I mean, not unless you're worried about smell permeating throughout the entire house.
I mean.
But even still.
Smell permeating. Like, you're like, smell permeating the house. My brain automatically goes to Anne Frank. It's just a dark place.
I was just like, well, I mean, the basement just makes the most sense because you can like bust out some walls. Bust out a part of a wall and just like have a body hiding area.
Yeah.
Why am I talking about that? I was like, that's like way too much planning. Like, Lydia, have you thought about how to hide a body before?
I mean, if you haven't, are you even American?
Oh, you know what? Thank you for being very patriotic. Only real Americans think about places to hide bodies.
I like a lot of true crime stuff. And let me tell you that
it is big.
In America has really put that on lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've perfected the art. So, like, I mean, all of the greats. I mean, there's some unsolves that are really good out there, but like from other countries. But I mean, you get into the H.H. Holmes, and you get into, which also interesting, murder house, his murder castle. He probably had upwards of 250 or more. Victims. Yeah, H.H. Holmes. There's so many. Just reach your hand out into the internet with H.H. Holmes, mm-hmm. and then you will pull back just the cluster of so many of this just messed up lime pools, mm-hmm. you know, of grave robbing. It's fascinating stuff. So if I've gotten that far in my thinking, I think Howard really has dropped the ball.
Mm-hmm.
But,
Howard just died via Tuscan paling.
Yes.
And
girlfriend and Teddy shocked.
And yet Johnny Depp's character, detective, what's his face? He knows exactly what needs to be done.
Yeah.
He being an outsider of this trio, knows he has to be the one who pulls that trigger.
He raises dead to rights straight at mm-hmm. Wallace, and Wallace emits this curdling scream. Shall we try it? Do you remember it? Do you remember how it sounds?
Yeah, it sounds something like, ah, and it
like that dude must have practiced it for so long.
This is why we think Justin Long is such a good actor. Not because of the dinner scene where he is like literally crying and breaking it down.
He
as
did a great job.
Breaking down as a, such a good scene. But it's really what puts it over the top is the walrus scream.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, big shock to you guys. Johnny Depp does not kill him.
No.
The trigger is not pulled.
No.
It is obvious in that scene, I think, to me that like, well, maybe it's not obvious. Wallace sees his girlfriend. My instinct was that he then wanted to die.
Mm-hmm.
But also, maybe not. Like, it's just not terribly clear. I mean, he's gone. He's fully walrused now. His humanity is, like, shoved up in his face. And then a gun is shoved up in his face. And then Depp doesn't pull the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, I mean, as we look at the last scene of the movie...
Okay, so the last scene is pretty much Teddy and Allie coming to like this Canadian animal preserve.
Yeah, it's really broken down, very derelict.
Yeah. C grade animal preserve. Like the pool that they come to, because they're walking to this place, there's a pool that's probably pretty deep, but the amount of, what is it? Like, I don't want to say
square footage.
Like, it may be deep, but like width and length, it's like maybe the size of a really big dining table.
Yeah, it just looks like the place looks like a house that's been repurposed to being an animal sanctuary. So it looks like just an in-ground pool that you'd see at a residence in like California or somewhere.
Yeah, it almost looks smaller.
It's not terribly big.
Yeah,
just and there's a doghouse looking igloo shaped.
It's a walrus house, kind of like a dog house, but it's a walrus house, ladies and gentlemen. I know we've spoiled a lot for you, but I gotta spoil this for you. Wallace isn't dead.
No,
he is in the house,
the walrus house,
the walrus house,
which is an outdoor enclosure with a in-ground pool,
right?
And okay, so Allie and Teddy walk up. Okay, they walk out on this drives me crazy. They walk out onto a deck out the back of the house.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, up. Okay. It's on the second story, and they have brought they call out for him. They're like, Wallace, I think.
Yeah. 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 Allie's like, Wallace.
Oh, and it, by the way, this is a cut from a year later. So,
yeah.
So they've gone from shotgun in the face to 1 year later. And she has this, the way that Kevin Smith describes it during the credits, P.S. listen to the entire credits if you don't have the context of the podcast. Okay, so she has this newspaper, and she unwraps a fish and throws it all nonplus, like she just throws it over, like she overhands it into the enclosure. There are bars. There's no reason they can't walk up to the enclosure. My notes are like, bruh, walk up to it.
I don't know how comfortable I would feel if my last boyfriend, I don't know how happy he's going to see me with my current boyfriend, who was also his best friend. And I'm just trying to give him like a fish. Maybe if I had like more fish, he'd be happier. I don't know if I would see that as being safe.
Also, the cups. They're...
So the whole theme of this movie, throughout this whole movie, there has been a series of there's been this cup
that represents Wallace's humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know how a walrus would use a cup.
I know.
I mean,
well, you leave it in front of them on the ground, and they, you know, do that walrus jump up to it.
The jump hump.
Jump up.
Tell me it doesn't look like that.
It does.
Okay.
And then they just like do the whole like, you know, they put their mouth on it. Does he still have lips?
Yeah, but I don't think he can close them. That's why his screams are like,
because I always scream with my mouth closed.
I only scream with my mouth closed. Okay. Oh, so. It's a very romantic scene. A sad romance.
Yeah, yeah.
And the way Smith tells it during the credits, it's just so very much like, it's kind of those sing. Okay, so she's crying, and remember the scene where she's like, did we talk about this? The scene where she was like, my father was like, you have to cry. That's what makes you.
Yeah, the monologue. Yeah. Well, no. Like it's intercut with this scene is the flashback with her and Wallace.
Okay, so this is in that freaking. Sorry, Jonathan. In the blow scene, but it's so long that they have to cut it throughout this whole film to give context. So they cut back to her sitting next to him before they, you know. Go back to it, I guess. Go back to doing it, I guess. And she's just like, I don't know about your foreplay, but like talking about my dad is probably not high on my list of being like, you know, my dad always said it's a good thing to cry.
Well,
it's what separates us from the animals.
I didn't know if it was like before or after. Oh, no. I kind of got the feeling like it was after, but you're getting the feeling like it's before.
Yeah, I think it was. She was. Sorry. Okay, so she was going down on him, right? And then she stops in the torture part of it. And then they get complaining. She moves over to the bed. He moves over to the bed. They have a conversation. And earlier in the movie, it looks like they just go back to doing it pretty quick. But this looks like there was more to that conversation than we saw. And so like she in the middle of before they get it on is like, you know, my dad. you know, Pops, let's go talk about him for a little while.
She did have a lot of respect for her dad, though.
And I appreciate that. Brought it all together.
Yeah.
But, like, the whole, it's good to cry. It separates us from the animals. Mm-hmm. And then she's looking at him, and she's crying, and he's looking at her, tears running down his face, and then they turn and walk away, and he's just crying. And, oh, probably the part of the movie that I didn't like the most was when Mr. Tusk 2.0 Wallace turns to the camera and tears streaming down his face, the most human he's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
And then it pans away
while the sad song plays.
Yes. Oh. The song was terrible. But it was like, I can't stand the whole movie, there was no cut to camera. And uh-huh. I'm okay with cut to camera if it's a thing that goes throughout the movie. But if it's the one time it happens, I'm just like, don't break the fourth wall with me now.
Mm-hmm.
You have to establish that we are in on this together, Deadpool style. Or you need to leave it at the door, buddy, because we are not together. I am observing you. I am the alien life form.
So when he looks at the camera, mm-hmm. and you see the tears, that's you think that's a breaking of the fourth wall, and he's hinting to the audience?
I don't think he's hinting at the audience. It's just a fourth wall break that is unprecedented through the entire movie. I mean, there were times of characters looking directly at the camera, but it was supposed to be another person.
Right.
And I feel this way about me a lot of the time, but I am not a person to Wallace. There's no reason why he should be looking at me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it filled me with rage. A near walrus type rage. I was like,
with your lips closed.
Yeah. So yeah. The fact that this film was the result of a stoner rant on a podcast,
mm-hmm.
I appreciate. If I had the means, I too would fulfill every like hilarious inside joke, throwing money at it, just like these guys did.
Mm-hmm.
They spent $3 million on this movie. Last I checked on IMDb, it made $1.8 million.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel like it's going to have the slow creeper monies that other cult films have.
Right.
I don't know if it'll ever have that kind of following.
Right. Like Clerks, that wasn't big in the theaters, but when it got to VHS, that's when it started building its cult following.
Yeah, like everybody has to see this. You have to see this. Yeah.
And nobody did that with Tusk. And it's kind of sad because I think Kevin Smith deserves to get that money back. So if you are an avid Kevin Smith fan and you haven't bought this movie yet, you should, because he deserves your money, because I think he's a wonderful filmmaker.
Yeah.
I would never call this a bad film.
It really has some fantastic cinematic qualities. And mm-hmm. it totally did feel like Jaws through mm-hmm. a lot of it, like dark Jaws.
Yeah. if what was it? If Richard Dreyfuss got turned into a shark.
Yeah. Sure. And you could have. Like, have you seen the picture of him laying in the, laying in Jaws' mouth?
Mm.
He's like, they're just goofing around on set. The thing, the Jaws machine broke down so much that at some point he just climbed in the mouth and had his picture taken. Just draped over it. Like, smiling and sitting up. Yeah. He's not like pretending to be dead, which is what my natural and uncreative go-to would be.
But, I mean, if you wanted to buy this movie, then I would highly recommend you buy it. I would not necessarily say you had to watch it.
I would. Okay.
That's a pretty shady thing to say. Sorry.
I would not. I'm with you. I just think that I enjoy watching this film much more with. Okay. I much more prefer this movie with somebody
mm-hmm.
than I did watching it alone.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is definitely a Down With Your Homes movie.
Right.
Whereas there are other. Oh, what's a good example of a movie that I could watch alone and it would be fine? Schindler's List. No, just kidding. I've never actually seen Schindler's List. There's huge gaps in my repertoire because I spend my time watching things like Tusk.
you know, but I have to say I've watched both Tusk and Schindler's List. And while Schindler's List is more historically relevant, Tusk is more like I only remember like one thing from Schindler's List, and this was
it the list?
No, it was not. It was not Schindler. It was not the list. Oh, here. I remember one thing from Schindler's List, and that is there's this little girl in red. The entire movie's in black and white, but there's this one little girl in red, and you see her progress through the movie. And at one point, she's like, you know, running in the street playing with a ball, I think. And then another time, she's like standing with her family. And then the last time you see her is when she's dead. And it's really poignant.
Hey,
and it's,
hey,
yeah,
spoilers.
Just keep going.
Okay, sorry. Didn't mean control Z. Let's go back to a previous save. Anyways, but it's like, it's very poignant, you know, with how it stands, but it's the only thing memorable in the movie. Tusk is a movie that I will remember. Like, I will be like, I will be in a nursing home and I will be thinking about this podcast, and the very first episode I will know is Tusk, and I will probably remember Johnny Depp's performance.
Yep.
But it's going to be like a few days after I remember other parts of the movie, and I'm going to be like, oh, that's right, Johnny Depp was in that movie. Oh.
What's going to happen for me is I'm going to be trying to do something really deep. I'll be writing a eulogy, mm-hmm. or a oology. And I will.
You googly.
Sorry, I even mispronouncing it wrong. Okay. But, I'll be writing a eulogy, and I'll be just like, and if you feel like you need to cry, go ahead and do it, because it's what separates us from the animals. And I'm going to sit back. I'm going to deliver that eulogy. I'm going to sit back and to begin my grieving process. And then I'm going to remember that I quoted the Tusk as I tried to help friends grieve. Yeah, that's Sprinkles in the background. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's nice. She's missing a roommate right now. So,
yeah. Yeah.
So she's letting us know about it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we have decided. Okay. So that, ladies and gentlemen, my applauders, that is the movie Tusk.
Mm-hmm.
I would recommend it.
I would definitely recommend it. Even if I like the idea of watching it with friends. If you do watch this movie, make sure you watch it with people who you care about, people who care about you,
who are not easily offended.
Right. Because if you are easily offended, you will not like this movie, which is really sad, because everybody should experience this movie at least one time in their life.
Or not. It's your choice. So, I mean, we just basically served it to you on a silver platter, so you don't mm-hmm. really have to watch it.
Yeah.
But I would. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, if this conversation has not compelled you, nothing I think possibly could, mm-hmm. unless you go back and listen to the original podcast it's based on. Which now, in retrospect, means this is a podcast about a podcast that created a movie.
It's a podcast about a movie that was originally created by a podcast. So that has gone full circle. The only next step is if we create a movie about this podcast, which I don't know.
And then Kevin Smith could make a podcast yeah. about our movie. Oh. About.
And then it just keeps going. Oh. And then it just keeps going and going and going.
Meta-fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So... All right. So
are we just really doing this podcast because we want to meet Kevin Smith, and we're too much of dorks to act? Like, this is how we meet celebrities.
I'm personally looking to get sued by Kevin Smith.
Oh.
And then, like, and that means we're connected forever, legally.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be in writing. And in like 100 years, when society has collapsed, someone's going to be looking at some old data files and mm-hmm. be like, huh, Kevin Smith is connected to Naomi McQuaid and Lydia Malcolm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Or they'll just be doing some really in-depth research on walrus phalluses. Sorry, whale phalluses, walrus phalluses. All right. Anyways.
Yeah.
So should we tell our friends what's coming up next?
The next movie we're going to be talking about is Tim Burton's Batman Returns.
I know. You're drooling already.
Oh, it's such a good movie.
I mean, it was a favorite as a kid.
Oh, I know.
But then I watched a YouTube video about it just a little bit ago, and I was like, oh, maybe I don't remember that as clearly as I thought I did. So I'm looking forward to talking about it next we visit you.
Yes, it'll be wonderful. It has your favorite Batman villain, right?
Oh, yeah, the Penguin all the way. Well, okay, Mark Hamill's Joker.
Oh, yeah.
Is kind of like right in there, but like I grew up, I really like the Penguin just in general.
Yeah, same here. Like Catwoman. I mean, to be fair, when the movie came out, I was really into cats. Still kind of am. But I mean, like her personality. I really like Catwoman in this movie, and it is better. I mean, just Catwoman is very iconic.
It's the only one that I would put on the table with Eartha Kitt.
Oh yeah.
So
oh yeah.
Okay. Anyways, we'll talk about it later.
Okay.
Jonathan will pop in and give us give you all of our socials and social media plugs, mm-hmm. and we will eventually come up with a catchphrase. Feel free to use those social medias to give us various suggestions on what you think we should do.
Oh yeah, like movies or just general media. Like, is there something that causes you to just be like, oh yes, oh yes, oh yes? Oh, am I getting that in the mic?
I especially love when somebody loves something that they're like, I can't get any of my friends into this. Or you found yourself explaining something that you love at a party and you can just see the person, not necessarily because people try to be nice, but the mm-hmm. person glazes over a little bit and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I gotta stop. Yeah. I found myself in many a Red Dwarf situation where I'm trying to be like, no, 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 it's great. There are these four guys. Try to keep it something that we can consume and spit back out at you in a relatively short. We're not going to be able to watch all of Naruto.
Yeah, sorry guys. Like if you do have like a TV series that you'd like to enjoy, maybe like bring it down to one episode, maybe two, but two would probably be pushing it. Yeah. Because that's like if you're looking at a movie that's about less than 2 hours, then you would be looking like, you know, 2 hour long episodes.
Well, I mean, look how long we've talked about Tusk.
I know.
It's probably, or we'll like, look and see, it's probably longer than the movie Tusk.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. Definitely. Because there's a lot to unpack.
And we did. I think we really got the walrus out of the mm-hmm. walrus out of the walrus enclosure.
We took the man out of the walrus suit.
We walked down from that patio and we put that fish right in your mouth.
And we also gave you Chug-a-Lug.
Chug-a-Lug. Pour a Chug-a-Lug out for your homies, yeah. as you go to rent Tusk.
Yes.
And I guess we'll see you next time.
Talk with you later. Bye.
Congratulations, applauder. You've finished part 3 of our deep dive into Kevin Smith's reverse anthropomorphic psychological thriller, Tusk. Hey, this is your audio engineer and man in a penguin suit, Jonathan, requesting your presence for episode 2 of Shocked and Applaud's takedown of the world's most pleasantly unpleasant stories. Did I mention there would be utility belts? Join us next time for our review of Tim Burton's Batman Returns. But before then, why not head to patreon.com and help us upgrade our audio equipment by patroning us? Just search for Shocked and Applaud. You can also find us on Twitter at Shocked Applaud or Facebook at Shocked and Applaud. We'll have a homepage for you to favorite soon as well, download latest episodes, and pique your paranoia prior to our next production. It's called alliteration, kids. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.